I'd like to call the meeting to order, the Thursday, October 16th, Public Financing Advisory Committee meeting. Welcome, everybody is here. We have a quorum today. We were just discussing with Ms. Grimes that she is going to be leaving us at the end of the year, so her presence is very special to us. I'd like to discuss the approval of the minutes of the September 11th, 2014 meeting. Has everybody had an opportunity to review those?
Yes.
Do we have a motion to approve?
A motion.
A second?
I'll second.
Any discussion?
Not able to vote, wasn't here.
Neither was I.
I was here. They're good.
Okay. Well, all of those who were here, I'd like to call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Oppose?
And two abstains.
And two abstains. All right. That brings us to our agenda item. And that would be the approval and concept of the issuance of short-term taxable pension obligation bonds to prepay the county's fiscal year 2014-15 pension obligation and selection of financing team. Ms. Lester, who will be presenting?
At this time, I'd like to ask Lewis McClure of CEO Public Finance to present this item.
Thank you, Suzanne, and good afternoon, Honorable Chair and members of the committee. I did want to make one quick clarification. It's actually the 15-16 pension contribution that we're prepaying.
Before we go forward, counsel, is that a problem?
No, I don't see that as a problem.
Okay, we're correcting the subject line.
You're just adding the...
Not adding, correcting.
2015, yeah. Right? I mean, they're going to be issued. Error. It's going to be issued. Yeah. They're going to be issued in 2015, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Right. That's fine.
Okay, well, thank you. Item three is for the approval in concept and selection of the financing team for the 2015 POBs. Generally, the county is able to pay its contribution to the county's retirement system monthly. However, for the past few years, the county has prepaid its contributions in a lump sum in order to receive a discount from the county's retirement system, OSRS. The county has been able to make these prepayments by issuing short-term pension obligation bonds, or POBs. If approved, the county expects to sell its POBs in the market using a strategy of multiple fixed-rate maturities. The bonds will need to be issued in mid-January in order to receive the discount from OSRS, and will be the final maturity will be no longer than June of 2016. Based on a projected contribution amount of $383 million, the gross savings from this deal would be $22 million. The net savings will depend on maturity schedule, interest rate, and cost of issuance. In terms of the financing team, staff recommends using K&N and ORIC for financial advisor and bond counsel, respectively. In March 2013, an RFP process was completed for both financial advisor and bond counsel, and K&N and ORIC were both selected and have general purpose contracts, including pension obligation bond financings. In addition, both firms have served on the team for the county's previous POBs, and ORIC completed the validation process under which all the POBs are issued. The estimated compensation for ORIC and K&N under these agreements are $112,000 and $50,000, respectively. Due to the projected size of the issuance, staff recommends hiring two underwriters to provide better market coverage and distribution of the bonds. For the selection of underwriters, staff just completed an RFP process in which J.P. Morgan and Stifel both rose to the top. Both firms have POB experience, and J.P. Morgan recently served as the underwriter for the county's 2013 POBs. Both firms proposed a takedown of 25 cents per bond, which equates to about $96,000 on that $383 million issue. For frame of...
Excuse me. There's a sliding scale there from 25 cents, I think it's to 80 cents.
Yes, I was just going to get to that. The highest amount proposed was 80 cents, which equates to about 300,000.
And that would be for a different term, a shorter term or a longer term?
We asked the respondents, they all responded to the same term, some just priced differently. That's basically their fee.
I understand what it is. I'm trying to figure out why one would be 25 cents
what's the difference?
One would be 80. What's the difference?
That's just the way they bid. Just as if any other firm would bid, they just bid a different price.
maybe I'm not making myself clear. On J.P. Morgan, it said it went from 25 cents to 80 cents on J.P. Morgan, on your line number B1B.
Also with Stifel.
Yeah, also with Stifel.
If I could clarify, Chair Hughes and Committee Member Moore, the scale, 25 cents represents the winning bids from Stifel and J.P. Morgan. 80 cents represents a vendor who bid and was not selected. So there's a vendor, and there's a couple vendors for whatever reason seem to be really out of touch with market pricing and bid extremely high. So I think the vendor that bid 80 cents was Siebert Branford and Schenck.
Right. So it's not J.P. Morgan is going to get $95,750. Has nothing. They're not going to get the $306,000.
Right. I understand.
It's just not clear here.
It's not, and the chart isn't very clear. Right. Right.
So,
what we were trying to do is show a range of all the different firms and what they bid.
Right. But J.P. Morgan bid 25.
Correct.
As well as Stifel.
Correct.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Treasurer.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Hughes. I did have a question on the fees. When I look at the schedule, it looks like the highest number of points, which was 75, went to Wells Fargo Securities. So my question is, since both J.P. Morgan and Stifel were at 71 and 73, how could they have had the lowest price?
That's actually, they also bid 25 cents per bond, but their other expenditures were a little bit lower, so I think they got, if I could get into the committee's head, the review panel's head, I think they probably gave them a couple extra points because of that. Their total expenses, because they also pay for underwriters' counsel and some other small fees in there as well.
So I guess my question would be, since they weren't the lowest, because it looks like they're the lowest bidder, would they be willing to accept those lower pricing? And that kind of went back to my pricing with, looking at what did we pay prior for this? How does this compare? You know, you give us this deal, but we've done these, quite a few years, 2006, 2007, 2011, 2014, the ones that you did actually issue. It would be helpful to know what were the fees that were at that time instead of just what the RFP was here, just for mm-hmm. information.
Understood. If I, just going off memory, these are the lowest takedowns I think I've ever seen.
On the 25.
Yeah, the 25.
The 25.
Is the lowest, I think, I've
and
ever
then
seen
I guess, so this isn't the total fee. I guess it would be nice to see what the, because fee is certainly important. I mean, obviously we have a lot of the others.
The all-in prices.
Right, to see what the all-in price was.
I think the reason we use the takedown only in this instance is that the other costs, the other fees are just kind of pass-through fees. It would be like hiring an appraiser for your mortgage. It's
somebody's paying it.
Right, someone's paying it, but it's not their fee. So it's kind of like almost a pass-through, but I understand.
Right, it's still that where it's going to detract, any higher cost is going to detract from the amount that those, the county's going to pay, because they're going to get less because they're paying more in fees.
Right.
So you're saying that Wells Fargo had the same 25, you think, but
correct.
They had...
I think their fee for underwriters' counsel was just a small amount smaller.
Well, why aren't we using them?
Why? Yeah.
Because they had a lot less experience with POBs. So if you look at the other evaluation criteria, they didn't score very well.
Did we go back, though, to J.P. Morgan and ask them to match Wells Fargo's bid?
If I can clarify what that difference, and these are minuscule differences of a couple of thousand, we saw some things in that didn't quite make sense, which is why we ended up putting the takedown, which is the significant portion of the fee. We saw a more than one vendor propose to use the exact same person from the exact same firm as their underwriter counsel, and
different pricing.
Yes, and so that was sort of an anomaly. So we don't make it a practice to select the underwriter council. Underwriter selects the council that they have a contract with and are comfortable using. Although, you know, if we objected to a certain council being used, we would express our opinion and we would reserve that right to reject. But, and you know, it was within a couple of thousand, but that's the difference in the price, is those council fees. And since that didn't seem to be apples to apples, and it seemed to cause a little bit of confusion, we recommend going with the takedown, which is by far the significant pricing component.
Have we used J.P. Morgan before on these pension obligation bonds?
Yes, in 2013.
So we used them last year?
No, the year before, actually.
And we don't know what they charged us?
I don't know it off the top of my head.
Because it would be interesting to know.
And I gather you had a good experience with them?
Yes.
And just if I can expound on that, we had excellent experience. We were over two times subscribed. I mean, which means we had far more orders than we had bonds available. And in the middle of the pricing, the underwriter was able to adjust the scale because there was so much demand.
Well, we could argue that we paid too much.
Then. Right. So you could argue the other. That's exactly what I was thinking. Priced them too high, and so everyone wanted to buy them.
I mean, we could provide that pricing, but I recall the same as Mr. McClure, that the fee takedown that we paid in 2013 was more than is being proposed here today.
Is this J.P. Morgan Securities, or is it J.P. Morgan Bank?
It'll be a sub of the bank.
It's a sub of the bank?
It's gotta be.
Is that the way it works?
Yeah, it's J.P. Morgan Securities. Obviously, right. There's a structure, corporate structure there. So approval in concept today by PFAC will allow the financing team to move forward and further analyze the option of issuing the POBs. And as always, staff will return to PFAC and the board once the details of the financing are determined and the documents are substantially complete.
In future, can we clear that up a little bit? You're showing range. It's really not helpful because it lets us let me to believe that, you know, there was a traveling scale there for J.P. Morgan or whoever gets that.
Sliding scale.
Thank you. Sliding scale. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair Hughes. So I'm going to start just with my first question on the financial advisor and bond counsel. And when we go through the paragraph there, you're recommending KNN and ORIC because I know they have prior experience. I guess my question is, again, we say the estimated compensation is $112,000 and $50,000. Without knowing, I mean, they're very familiar with this. We used them before. What are the prior pricings? It's hard for me to just have a number here because I don't think this one we went through an RFP. We went through an RFP in 2013. Right. Is that where we're using a list of providers and you can select one from the provider? So right. My question is it competitive pricing that we're getting for those? I understand that they've done a good job and they've, you work well with staff, which is great. But I am also wanting to make sure that since they have prior experience, how is that pricing reflecting that versus other pricing that came in? So that would be my first question on the financial advisor and bond counsel.
Sure. ORIC actually called and quoted a fee. The last time they did the public offering in 2013, they were paid $128,000. Mm-hmm. And they agreed to reduce their fee by 12.5%, 15% based on exactly what you just said, that they're familiar with the documents. It should be easier over time.
Same size offering?
No, it's not based. Their fee is more a flat fee based on the amount of work they'll have to do. Whether it's a smaller amount or larger amount, it doesn't affect their work as it does probably a little bit, but not much.
Well,
so I think that's very helpful, and you know, that'd be helpful to put in to know that staff did that good work. We went out because I think as part of our RFPs, I was just reading it for an RFP we do. It says that the last step is to then negotiate a final price. It doesn't mean that the price that's on the RFP has to be that final price that's there.
Madam Treasurer, we are going to, I'm going to bring up an item at the end, mm-hmm. which may address some of that, is reporting back to some of the results of our previous actions.
Ah.
because we seem to be coming back to that every meeting.
Yeah. If I might just add to the conversation, Chair Hughes, we have a current contract, an agreement with K&N and ORIC that addresses, among other things, the price, the compensation.
Was this the five-year term that we approved when we did that?
Correct.
But I thought it was subject that we could review the pricing when we approved that, because there was some discussion amongst here. You remember that, Wallace? Yeah.
I think the pricing is set in the contract, although ORIC did reach out unsolicited to offer a reduced price, which, of course, we accept.
Mr. Hammond.
Well, as I read this, apparently ORIC originally did a trust indenture, which requires annual updates or supplemental indentures. So it seems to me that if ORIC did the original indenture agreement, all they got to do is hit print here. All right, for the supplemental indenture, am I being simplistic here?
No. When they did the original deal in 2007, they actually charged more because they had to do the validation action and
right.
do all
Makes
of that.
Sense.
And then they, you know, in their scope of work, it cuts their fee back to now that we're kind of doing these supplementals. A lot changes, though, every time. And they also are a disclosure council, so they prepare the OS and a lot of the other documents. So they're still doing a lot of work. The page count of the trust indenture is probably a lot less, but it's still they still have to start from scratch.
Any further comments?
I have a comment. In years gone by, help me with this, Suzanne, my memory, but as I recall, when we issue these pension obligations, we have to. The statute requires us to pay off the last one before we can do a new one. Is that correct? Something like that. And then my next question, the follow-up question is, have we paid up the last one? In other words, have we paid up our...
So, and again, this is Suzanne Lester from CEO Public Finance. You may be thinking of our tax and revenue anticipation notes, or TRANS, our cash flow borrowings that we would typically, when we had identified a cash flow need, would issue in July 1 of any given year and would need to be paid off by June 30 of that same fiscal year. In this case, for example, we would expect to issue the pension prepayment bonds January 15th and pay that to OSERS, and then that would cover the period of July 1, 2015 through June 30th, 2016. At the same time, we're continuing to pay off the 2014 bonds, which will still have some maturities in February of 2015, I believe May 2015, and will be paid off June of 2015. So there is a little bit of an overlap.
That
is legal.
All right, okay, I was confused. But we're current on our 2014.
Correct,
payments.
We have a debt service schedule. We've made one payment in August, according to the schedule. We have the next payment is due in November of 2014, and then after that would be the February of 2015.
All right, thank you for clarifying that. The other question I have is, can you give us, I know you, this is a guess, but can you give us an estimation of what the net savings will be?
$22 million, wasn't it?
As opposed to the gross savings of $22 million?
You know, last time the interest was right around $3 million, so I guess you could just generally subtract maybe
and cost of issue
right so you know maybe 3.3 or so but that was on a smaller principal amount because our contribution was slightly smaller last year, so we'll have to you know maybe 3.5.
yeah, so somewhere in 17-18 million would be the net.
It's
right,
this is our estimate.
And also to complicate matters, some of the departments. Yeah, the estimated net savings last time was $24 million.
But this time?
The 2014 bonds.
Okay.
That was a title problem.
Yeah.
Same title problem.
Okay.
At least you were consistent.
Yeah. I mean, to complicate matters, some of the departments that are cash rich at a certain point in time, they'll prepay without opting into the financing. So there's still some juggling to do.
Like the landfill.
Right. The dumps.
Yeah. Which I read in a paper.
Yep.
Right.
The airport, some of those departments.
So cash. So if the airport and the landfill, et cetera, if they elect to prepay themselves, will it still be $380 million or less?
It'll be significantly less. It'll be about 360 possibly. 363 would be our estimation. If all the departments that prepaid last year prepay again on their own, it would be about $20 million less.
Okay. All right. You should have mentioned that.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair Hu. So I still had just a question on the prior. So one is I'd like to thank ORIC. I'm not sure if they're here for stepping up and thank you very much for reducing. It sounds like we have a five-year agreement, and I don't recall the details of when we approved it. It sounds like there was some flexibility with pricing. So I do want to thank you guys. Obviously, these are costs that the county is going through. Tough fiscal times. We've got our, you know, state settlement that is going to drag on our budget. So I want to thank you and acknowledge the acceptance of that. If it's approved, which I assume it would be, K&N, I don't know if they, since it's the second time, if they would consider looking at that. That might be something that, you know, would be looking at. Obviously, if it is a five-year agreement, we have a contract. There's not a whole lot we can do. But, you know, I do appreciate that. The main item I did want to get to is on the underwriters. Now, this one, I know I talked with Suzanne, and I appreciate CEO Public Finance talking with me before. So in this case, it's slightly larger, and we're going with two versus last time we went with one. And I know we had, of course, one top one, which was J.P. Morgan at 279. Then we had Stifel at 276, and then we had 265 for Raymond James, and then it really pretty much dropped off. And I, you know, even though the fee of Wells Fargo was lower, obviously they were at 218, so they were quite low down. So, you know, when do we decide to go to two versus one? And I'm assuming that the pricing for the two is then going to be at the lowest. They both accepted the 25 takedown, and I'm not sure what the pricing for the other, you know, do they both have bond counsel that comes? Are we adding more pricing in when we add in two? Maybe you could just explain that process a little bit more. That would help me.
Sure. My understanding is they just use one underwriter's counsel, correct? Yep. They share an underwriter's counsel. So
okay.
It would really, I don't think it would add a whole lot,
doesn't
if add anything.
No, it actually diminishes the amount that each firm gets.
So there's no additional, so we don't have
right.
two bond counsels.
Right.
So thank you for clarifying that. I wasn't quite sure, you know, how that would go.
May the record reflect who clarified that?
It's Sean Drawley from J.P. Morgan.
Thank you.
So, you know, obviously that is an area. My next question, and I also did talk with CEO of Public Finances, there was an article in the paper and it indicate that there has been a state investigation of Stone and Youngbird that was similar to a 2012 probe involving another bond finance company, De La Rosa and Company. And I know both of those companies were purchased by Stifel. And I'd like to get an update. Are they still under investigation? And find out, because this is, I think, it's involving elected officials taking accepting dinners and brownies, and I can't remember what they said in the heading, a lot of things there, but and not reporting it. And I'm not sure how the underwriter reports it. It says they had to go back to expense records at Stifel. So maybe we could get an update for the board on what's happening with that, because that is a concern. It is, you know, in Orange County, we have a very strict ordinance. We can't accept anything. I know that's different than many other agencies, but it does concern me when we have information, especially to prior companies that you had, and, you know, are there any current investigations going on that we should be aware of, involving this type of nature?
And will any of those people be working on this transaction?
Well, it's a company.
So I'm Holly Vocal with Stifel, and actually the investigations were not on our companies, Stone and Youngberg and De La Rosa, which were acquired by Stifel. They were actually investigations by the FPPC, the Fair Political Practices Commission, on the various issuers at school districts, cities, and counties that that have done some work with us. And there is a Form 700 that these different officials were supposed to fill out. And for some reason or another, there were lapses in their submission of those forms. The FPPC reached out to STFL to ask for our records on, you know, what expenses we've had in working or in, you know, providing gifts or entertainment to these various officials, and we voluntarily gave that information. So the investigation was not on us, it was on the various officials at these municipalities.
But they were provided, the municipalities were provided gratuities or whatever they were provided from the former companies that STFL has acquired, is that correct?
Correct.
If I might have just a follow-up question, what reporting does the company have? Because I know I often go to conferences and agencies when I was prior to the county. There was an opportunity. We had the same state limit. I usually didn't accept any, but I know that the company said, you know, the cost of this is the X. So they sent you something that said, here is the cost of it. Because, of course, when you go to dinner, I mean, you may have an estimate of cost in your mind. Is there what is the company requirement to send those elected officials, understanding that they were completely wrong? They should have known they accepted something and they should have reported them. And I completely agree in the article. You know, I think the 25,000, there was 206 of them or something. I don't recall the, you know, how many there were, but there were several here in Orange County. I know Savannah School District is one of those that was here. And then there was others outside the county.
So we do our best when we invite clients to a large conference dinner in disclosing in that invitation what the value of that dinner is. So we include that in the invitation. And as a follow-up to that event, we also send a receipt for what that value is. And we note that this is a receipt with that value that you can use for your Form 700.
Council, can I call up on you? You look like you have something to say.
I do. Angie Duthrie, Deputy County Council. Conflict of interest rules and regulations are actually something that I frequently am called upon to advise on. As far as I'm aware, there is no legal requirement on companies to provide some kind of receipt or certification on the cost of a gift. It is incumbent on the person receiving the gift to determine the value, and the regulations provide different mechanisms for you to determine what that value is, because ultimately it's your responsibility to determine, one, value, and two, to make the disclosure. So here, the underwriters would be under no obligation to provide you the value of the gift, but and it's not illegal under the regulations to provide gifts, but it's ultimately the responsibility of the county official and the county employee to make that disclosure.
What about if we put in the contract that we don't want any gifts given to employees or representatives of the county?
That is actually a term and condition in many of our contracts, and it is. The county, as has been mentioned, is very strict because we have what's called a gift ban ordinance, and we cannot accept gifts under over $5. There are exceptions to what is defined as gift under the regulations, and we look at that on a case-by-case basis. But if I understand, this happened to a local agency who probably doesn't have as restrictions as we do. So they would be allowed to receive those gifts, and the only requirement is that they report them. And if I understand correctly, those officials just didn't report the gifts. So here, what the underwriters did is, as I understand it, didn't commit a crime, didn't violate a certain aspect of the law or regulation, but more so was the officials, by not disclosing and reporting the gifts, who are now under investigation.
I've been on these boards, as you know, for many, many years, and dealing with the court system, which has very strict conflict of interest laws and appointed by various whatever. We have in law, as you're very well familiar with, whether it's illegal or not, what is called the appearance of impropriety. And I'm reminded, my gentleman's not here that sat with me for years on PFECT when the bankruptcy occurred, which we were talking about before we even started, the environment that we have been in this county before, is that the appearance of impropriety can be more important than whether it's technically illegal. So just a shot across the bow for any of the vendors that are approaching this board, because I'm seeing a lot of head nods. I really not impressed, I'm giving back the general response, with the comment, well, it wasn't illegal. Well, I went to lunch with Miss Lester. She brought her own lunch, if I remember right. She was, and I was sort of insulted, and then I realized it wasn't the food quality. It was she wanted to make sure, and I'm on this board dealing with her in business, and she was so careful to bring her own sandwich. Actually, I thought my lunch provided would have been better, but that's another story. So for anybody who is this concerns me greatly, because they purchase these companies knowing of the problem, and I would have discounted their score just because of the appearance of impropriety. I'm sorry, they do the same thing to me as a lawyer. Yes, technically, you can say it's okay, but either you follow the rules or you don't. And you can't tell me that your company doesn't know what the rules are. You deal with public officials all the time. You know what conflict of interest is all the time. You know what gift bans are all the time. So that's my comments. I'm not real happy about that.
If I may, it's not, I guess what I'm trying to explain is it's not the responsibility to ensure that someone reports the gift. That has nothing to do with what the company did.
It's the responsibility of the company not to give the gift when they know the county has strict rules about taking those.
Okay. I mean, whether or not a company gives a gift, but they're not alone. I mean,
That's no excuse. They're not alone. I mean,
it's just, I guess I want to be clear that you're penalizing one company for a gift that they were legally entitled to give, and the other recipient received it. The offense was in the in not reporting it. It was not in the receipt of the gift, because you're allowed to receive gifts. You just have to disclose them, and there's a cap on how much you can receive from a single source.
But didn't you just say there was a $5 maximum?
But only for the county. Yeah. It's only the county, though. This wouldn't apply to school districts in the county. It's just for Orange County officials and employees.
Right.
That's it. That ban does not apply to anybody else.
That's not true. There's court bans.
Well, that may be something
we can't even
different.
Give a box of See's candy at Christmas anymore, which saved me a lot on boxes of See's candy.
And that may be true. The court itself might have a policy. We have a policy in our office. We don't accept absolutely anything because of our gift ban ordinance. But the arm of that ordinance only applies to county officials and employees. It doesn't apply to anybody else unless that jurisdiction adopts a similar restriction or adopts a policy. But this, again, it does not apply to school districts. A school district board would have to adopt a policy restricting it as much as Orange County.
And if I might add, Chair Hughes, this is Suzanne Lester from CEO Public Finance again. Just to let you know how the county and the county executive office in particular handles this. You know, a couple times a year we might go to a conference. I just recently returned from the Bond Buyer Conference. Last year I went to the GFOA, Government Finance Officers Association Conference. And at these conferences, after these sessions are over for the day, it's not uncommon to go to a dinner organized by a vendor where you have dinner with the vendor that's organized a large group of people. It's an opportunity to meet your colleagues. At the GFOA conference, I did have dinner with De La Rosa and Company and Holly and her supervisor, Raul Amezcua. I met my colleagues from Riverside County that I had never met before, San Diego County, a chance to have a contact to reach out to in the future. I found that to be an extremely valuable dinner. But I'm responsible. I know what the rules are. At the end of the dinner, I asked Holly for a copy of the receipt. I tallied my version or my total, and I wrote a De La Rosa and Company a check. And so that is the expectation for employees of the county, and it is our responsibility to know what our rules are, and we follow those rules. But without the opportunity to have that experience and be able to make those contacts, I feel like I'm missing out on valuable resources that I can reach out to on when various issues come up that I could use some assistance with.
Mrs. Lester, that's not the issue. The issue, you should be going to those conferences, and everybody understands the value of the education that you receive. Even over dinner, it can be extremely helpful. And the connections, which allow you to get your Rolodex where you can call for help and do those things. The problem is that the culture that we have in our elected officials or appointed officials or even some officials who are on payroll that we've had to deal with over the years, Mr. Citron being one and the sheriff being another, and we could go on and on and on. It's refreshing to meet somebody who hasn't been indicted lately. is that those of us who volunteer our time and work on these public boards, we're the oversight board to say who's watching the farmhouse. Right. And we were appointed, I think, each one of us, because of our strong beliefs in integrity and following the rules, and we have to do that. And so when it got pointed out that we've got this scandal going on, and I'm not slandering anybody, it's just an allegation, that it is a concern as to why that is not considered in the point system, because I think it should be. It should be public record. I go to hire a lawyer, I pull up their bar record.
Absolutely.
I would only say because the investigation is not on Stiefel. They're not the ones being investigated. They didn't do
it. They acquired the firm. So
right, but the firm.
Did they do their diligence on
yes,
that? Were they unaware
They didn't.
They didn't know that was
the
happening?
The FPPC will only investigate the elected official or employee. That is the focus of the investigation. They don't investigate the companies who give the gift because it's not illegal to give a gift.
I think you're missing the point. I asked if they did their investigation. They were aware of this when they acquired this company.
Stiefel, yes.
Stiefel
was aware.
Stiefel stands in their shoes then. They were aware of it, and they've gone on.
I just, it's a point of clarification that they're not a subject of an investigation is what I'm trying to clarify.
We got that.
Okay.
Mr. Hammond, you always have something wise to say, and you just...
Well, I think, I don't know the facts about the Stiefel situation at all, but having been in the business world for a long time, longer than you,
I find that hard to believe.
And listening to Suzanne's explanation and the way the world works in terms of so-called gifts, if you would. What I've heard here, I'm totally satisfied that everybody's very conscious of this within the purview of what we're supposed to be looking for. I think that should Stiefel, maybe Stiefel concluded that there was no case. Maybe they've decided that it's not their problem. They did properly. I guess they could call up the employee of the school district or whoever it was and say, did you report this? I guess they could do that, but that's not realistic. So I don't know. I think we're beating up a subject here that seems to be well covered, and I think we're overreacting here. I don't think there's an issue in this.
Yeah, well, here we go.
No, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to ask two questions on it. One is, are there any other, I'm involved in the school bond financing, and I know there are several investigations that are going on, and I don't have the details on some of them, and I just want to make sure that there are no investigations that are currently going on that would implicate any of the, and this is to staff, any of the companies that we are currently looking at. I know I was just at my national conference in August, and the wasn't the SEC. I'm trying to think of, you know, I think the FBI has been investigating on these school bond cabs, and I didn't go back and look, but if we check to say that there are no ongoing investigations, if we is that a question that we ask the firms at all to make sure there's nothing that is, again, is going to provide headline risk? Obviously, you're innocent until proven guilty, and I do want to thank you. I didn't realize you guys provided receipts to them and you gave them information. Obviously, that's great, and I applaud you for that. I would, you know, continue that. You know, the difficulty is that it is this perception. Unfortunately, you have, I mean, there was 200 officials, so it wasn't one. Is it something that, you know, the firm should get out of providing those dinners if people are not, you know, they're not reporting them because it reflects poorly on your company because you're in the news and you, of course, don't like to be in the news. And as most of the officials are there, their agencies should be picking up their dinners. So it shouldn't be something that the agency isn't picking up. But back to CEO Public Finance, are there any ongoing investigations that we have checked on any of these, because there are a lot of things going on in the school bond area, the financing area, that we should be aware of?
And that is a question that we ask in the RFP, and there is a answer provided, and usually it's either a whole page of potential items, or a reference to their website where you can look at, you know, nationally, mm-hmm. Items that are being investigated, but we review those and we didn't find anything that appeared it would have any impact on the county or any conflict of interest. So we didn't see anything that concerned us, so we are not aware of anything that would impact this potential transaction.
But what you're saying, it wouldn't impact us here, but if someone, and again, any of the firms were to get indicted on something, that wouldn't impact our transaction, but it would certainly implicate the integrity of the firm.
Well, but well. Mr. I'll say this. If you're going to go down that road, you won't do business with JPMorgan Chase, Bank of America, all of these banks who were in the news for far more egregious things than this. Right. So, I mean, you know, don't get on that slippery slope.
Well, I'm not looking at banking, but I'm looking at financing, bond
financing.
At
companies,
I'm really looking at financing.
You're looking at companies that allegedly have done wrong things. And it's the same issue here. So, I mean, I think, you know, we can be extreme about this issue, but I think we are being a little bit over the top here.
I think that we have given the message loud and clear. I do want to add that I've been appointed by governors several times, and they always ask in writing the question, is there anything that would embarrass the governor? And I always answer, well, unless you're talking about my first husband, I don't think so. But we have made the issue. We've let for our feelings. But any other issues, questions?
I have one more point I'd like to make. Oh. On this subject. Or changing subjects?
No, on this motion.
Oh, well, I do have one thing. In the past, historically and often, and I can't tell you how much, on these panels for picking you've usually or often had a PFAC member, and somehow or another that's gotten dropped. I'd like to make a suggestion that you consider that in the future.
Committee Member Hammond, we did have a PFAC member, Mr. Rodecker, on our last panel, and we will consider that in the future.
This team included two CEO, public finance manager, and one in the auditor, controller. But so you didn't have a PFAC on this one?
Correct. Not on this one.
All right.
But I actually served on one before Wally did.
Yeah.
And it was quite helpful to have that input. I remember those meetings. So
fun. I got shot down, but it was still fun.
Don't get me started. Any other? Okay. All right. Like to call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? It's unanimous. Okay, a couple of issues before we adjourn the meeting. I had a chance to talk to Ms. Lester before. One of the comments that we often hear is that there is no follow-up on our actions. And we'd like to add an agenda item if we can, Ms. Lester, and I'm going to task you to figure out what the format should be. It's not meant to create work. But would like to reference back to the various agenda items on certain date and what the results are, even the progress are. Because as our treasurer asked, well, what happened with this pricing? What was the result? And I think that you can direct your report to show us that the representations and where did they fall end up falling through. I believe that would be helpful. Anybody else have any comments on that?
I think it's a good idea. Maybe you could get a draft back to us before you do all the work, just to make sure it covers the points we're looking for.
Mr. Kim.
Madam Chair, my recommendation would be that the minutes reflect directives from the PFAC. That way they're memorialized in writing, and then we can simply go back and ask what the follow-up is, and we'll know what they are.
Sure, you can do them.
So as staff does the minutes, they should clearly highlight where there's directives from the board members.
Or an addendum to the minutes that said, we priced this last month and this is how it went.
Right. It's similar to what we do for the board agenda. For our regular board of supervisors agenda, we keep a directive log. And the directive log identifies which board member requested what information and who it was assigned to. And if there's a date certain that the board member requests information back by, it's identified in that log.
I think that's an excellent idea if there's a specific directive. But I'd also like, I think Ms. Lester and I talked about a general follow-up to begin with, and then if there's a specific directive, that sounds wonderful. But we literally, I can go back here and we'll talk about, well, what somebody was going to negotiate the price and come down, and did the bonds get issued? What was the final pricing? Where did we go? And I think we want to see what our results ultimately are. I also want to know if the Board of Supervisors doesn't approve our recommendations, or do they amend the recommendations coming out of PFAC, because that might give us some direction on how we might better serve the people of the County of Orange. Is that a question or problem?
No, I agree, and I think that somehow or another, just an attachment. I mean, I'm very curious about the Rancho, the CFD, how that came out, what's happened to that. I mean, it doesn't say anything, so it would be nice to have that information.
First,
whatever the most convenient format is, Mr. Kim's suggestion sounds fine.
Agreed, Chair Hughes, committee member Hammond. We will provide and we'll figure out a format, but we'll provide a status of the activity that's happened in between meetings related to progress of a debt issue we're working on, or the results of a bond issue that has completed, that we can provide at each meeting. So we will do that in the future.
Perfect.
Other than that, before we adjourn, the next meeting was set for November. Yes, ma'am.
I just had another item. I just wanted to, not related, but kind of not in line to the directives. But one of the things that I know would help me in future is to provide, and I appreciate a CEO public staff, they were able to explain a lot of the information that was a five-year agreement. It would be really helpful to have some of that in here so we have the pricing, so that it makes the meeting more streamlined, because those are things I think are an important part of the transparency document. They're there. You are able to answer those questions. It would just help me to have some of that pricing, maybe to have, again, when you're looking, because the fees are really what the county is going to pay in the cost of issuance. If, in addition to the table, you could have exactly what those fees for those bidders are, I think those would certainly help us. You mentioned that, again, I'm going to thank Oric for stepping up and dropping the fee this year for that. I think that would be very helpful to have some of that information so that we would have it. And then the last thing is, I know when I look at the agendas and other people look at the agendas, they're not very representative of really what action we're taking. And I don't know if that's a Brown Act. I think I brought it up last time, and I might be the only one on the board that's interested in this, so it may not get a, you know, more than me, but I'd like to see that approving concept selection of financial advisor as X, bond disclosure as X, and underwriter as X and X. Because then it someone looking at the agenda online can actually know what actions we're taking right now. They see this, and the other information isn't available online. So I think when anyone looks at it, they have to come to me. I refer them to CEO Public Finance because I guess they're public documents at this point, but I assume it should go through you. But it would be nice to have a little more clarity on the agenda. And again, that is up to what the board thinks. That's just my opinion of it. But I want to thank staff for providing answers to the questions that we had today.
Clarification. By the way, thank you for getting these to us ahead of time.
Yeah.
I'm grateful every time we get them. The next item was the next meeting. It's November 13th. I have a conflict that I discussed with you that would make I wouldn't be able to be there, and you said we might be able to move it, if that's possible.
Yes, Chair Hughes. With your permission, we could let the meeting stand for the moment, and then I can query the committee members, and we could come up with a new date. And then once we come up with a new date, we'll send a notice of cancellation for November 13th, and then we'll do sort of like we did this time with the October 16th, call a special meeting for the date that's agreed upon. And in all likelihood, just knowing where we are in the progress phase of development of a financing, I don't believe we're going to have an agenda item ready to present on November, so it'll likely just be canceled.
All right. Any other comments? Any comments from the public? Hearing none, meeting adjourned.